RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So, to the US and Australia's move to restrict puberty blockers and hormone therapy for minors. And why is New Zealand lagging behind with delayed action and weak safeguards? Back on RCR in 2025, I'm welcoming Jan Rivers, GenspectNZ at genspect.org, and spokeswoman for public good at publicgood.org.nz. Happy New Year, Jan. Thanks for coming back.
Happy New Year, Paul, and thank you for the invitation.
I wonder if it is a Happy New Year when it comes to this issue.
Not for New Zealand's young people, that's for sure, yes.
First of all, your reaction to the, well, I'd call them incredible events related to this out of the United States in just really the last few days. And just to remind folks who are listening, that Donald Trump signed an order to end federal support for gender transitions for people under 19. Here's a statement. It is the policy of the United States that it will not fund, sponsor, promote, assist, or support the so-called transition of a child from one sex to another, and it will rigorously enforce all laws that prohibit or limit these destructive and life-altering procedures. Music to your ears from possibly an unlikely source.
Quite, and yes, I'm not sure that it was expected, so it is very good news, and it really points to the inability of doctors to legislate or to manage themselves in relation to whether medicine is harmful or not. So it is good news, and it goes on the executive order to actually name WPATH, the World Professional Association of Transgender Health, as providing problematic advice, and says that it should not be taken, you know, any advice from that organisation should not be taken account of, which is the first time that's happened too. And it's a funny thing about executive orders that they don't have the power of law, so they could be overturned if there's a change in the balance of power in 2 years' time. But the thing I think is that it's quite likely that this will be followed up with actual legislation that would embed the arrangements in the US far more permanently.
And of course, it seems to be, well, if the election result is anything to go by, in the US, supported by the majority of voters in the US, or it's not an issue that was enough to swing a vote.
Yes. One of the funny things about the election was that I think for the first time for a long time, the new president won the popular vote. So there's obviously a very strong mandate for the kinds of changes that his government would be bringing in, including, I suspect, this issue around gender medicine. And one of the other things is that there was a definite fall in the number of women, the percentage of women who voted for the Democratic Party, which I think points to either disappointed Democratic voters or people who actually switched their allegiance.
I remember talking to Naomi Wolf last year, and she said that this election will be won or lost on the female vote. So you make an interesting point.
Oh, that's interesting. Gosh, yes.
Mm. Okay, and then across the Tasman, Queensland has halted youth hormone therapy. Well, they've paused it pending a review until 2026. That's the broad sort of brush headline. What is your understanding of what they're doing there?
It's a political decision. There's been a recent election, and the Liberal Party has taken over from a Labour administration, and that party came into power with a mandate to ban puberty blockers. But what's happened recently has been that there's been a review of gender medicine, an expensive and long-lasting review carried out under the Labour administration. And it was a bit of a Clayton's review. They discovered that all pigs were fed and ready to fly, and basically what was needed was more money for gender medicine and to cleave more tightly to the kinds of regulations put in place by the people who think that AusPATH and WPATH, AusPATH is the Australian version of WPATH were doing the right thing. So this is a complete about turn, somewhat unexpected, but appears to have been brought into place by a whistleblower from the far north, from Cairns. And it's a heartening move, and it means that there is time to do a proper review, and it will gladden the heart. There's a woman in the Queensland, in the Brisbane hospital, a woman called Gillian Spencer, who has been stood down now for more than 18 months because she refused to do medicine that she felt was harmful to children. And it's astonishing that things are finally turning in her direction. She's been incredibly courageous.
Okay, we'll get to New Zealand now. Though I want to make this point that there's been a huge increase in gender dysphoria diagnoses only very recently. X50. Now, everybody take that in, times 50. Without a linear increase leading up to that over the years, it's become, let's say, a thing only recently. An almighty spike. And no one seems to be questioning that. Why?
I
Isn't
think
that
that
where we should be starting?
yes, that is where we should be starting. And if you had any other thing that led a person into a lifetime of medication, you'd be kind of asking what's happening here. If it happened with heart disease or, any other kind of condition, you'd be looking for causation, especially because you're making lifetime patients. I think that data comes from the UK, but and we don't know what the figures are here because both in education and in health, the government has been relatively loath to provide data. And so the only data that we've got in New Zealand is sort of indirect from the records of Pharmac, the prescribing records of Pharmac. And we haven't yet got the 2024 records from Pharmac to see exactly what's happening in New Zealand. Funnily enough, in New Zealand, for the identification might be going up, but for the last couple of years, puberty blocker prescribing was going down. So we're not sure what the New Year's data will show.
Okay, well, back to Trump, because what has happened in the US theoretically should give some kind of permission for, or loosens the reins, let's say, of what commentary or positions our politicians and bureaucrats can take publicly without necessarily as much fear as they had. Do you think we've seen any sign of that yet? Any bold or sort of mojo recovery? Let me put it that way.
It would be very heartening if somebody within the government would take a courageous move. It seems to me that it's inevitable that this is going to change, and with two major the United States and Queensland changing direction in literally subsequent days, that direction of travel is becoming increasingly more urgent. I think one of the real problems for New Zealand is that we're kind of behind the rainbow curtain here in terms of the media. And I noticed that just maybe 3 or 4 days ago, Yvonne van Dongen finally published an article which had been commissioned by The Listener in 2021, but never published. What she wrote was suppressed, and the job was given to another journalist, Donna Chisholm, who wrote a very lightweight pro-trans medicine article, which was very extremely disappointing. And so Yvonne has finally self-published that article on her Substack, and it is a kind of searing statement about what's going on in New Zealand, and I hope it would be great if lots of people read it. But the reticence to really discussing this issue has been extremely disappointing, and it's still being assessed as a matter of transphobia or prejudice or discrimination. And I think one of the real problems that we've got here is that there are two views about gender medicine, and this is becoming increasingly apparent in the literature. There was something that came out just a few months ago, to which there was a New Zealand contributor, and it basically said that you either regard gender medicine as a civil rights issue, where there are trans children who need treatment, or you regard it as an issue of medical evidence, where you've got children who are distressed. And unfortunately, in New Zealand, we're still heading down that kind of social justice medicine avenue, rather than looking at the medical proof and the benefits to children of an open future, an unmedicated life, and the opportunity to grow into adulthood, where the vast majority of them would revert from their kind of gender discomfort, if you like.
But that still doesn't explain that massive spike that I mentioned before
No,
that no one's looking into. Yeah, okay. Before we get into where we're at here more specifically, I want to just play this because I think it sort of sets the tone. It's not totally related to gender treatment, but it possibly gives you an idea of where the government is. So let me just play this to you down the line. I'll get your reaction.
Actually, the fact that you're talking about bathrooms, that he's talking about bathrooms, that anyone else wants to talk about it, to me, is just the wrong issue at a time when New Zealanders are really dealing with an economic crisis.
So nothing to see a year or two ago in the run-up to the election. Okay, he was talking about bathrooms, but it all is interlinked philosophically, isn't it? So I wonder if he's got a different opinion now. Do you see any evidence of it?
As well as the media, I think another real concern is Christopher Luxon himself. And what that relates to is the perception that he is behind the scenes a Christian conservative. And so I think one of the things that the government has decided by and large to have a completely hands-off approach to is anything that could be seen as impinging on his credentials to be a sort of socially liberal prime minister. And unfortunately, children's lives and their futures are at the heart of that decision. And so I think there's a great incentive for Luxon and the National Party to be extremely one-eyed about this and to just send more and more kids into harm's way, which is a very, very, very sad.
Okay, so what irregularities or poor quality treatment would we have to see here for the government, led by him, to decide to ban, to stop, whatever word you want to use, prescribing of these hormone drugs?
That's an interesting question, Paul. And it appears to me that the bar is pretty high on this. We know that kids are introduced to puberty blockers at the very first at the very first consultation. We know that at Victoria University, they regard their access to gender medicine as being an asset to students who might want to come here for gender change. We know that they're prescribing testosterone through student health centres on the basis of student choice. There's no need to be to even have counselling alongside the decision to go on to a life-altering drug. We know, as you've mentioned, that the figures are increasing massively. We know that gender surgery has appalling results. We know that the rates of regret internationally are now looking as if they, in various different pieces of research, are between 30 and 60 to 70%. So we've got huge numbers of potential regretters coming through. It appears to me that there's a studied decision simply not to look at this at all. That's my concern. Otherwise, any government with a moral sense on this could have reined things in the way that they have in Queensland.
Where is the nub of, I'm calling it now, the gender dysphoria industrial complex? It seems to have become an industry. And in the United States, a lot of surgeons, a lot of psychologists are making a lot of money out of this. And I think it's okay to suggest that, that could be something developing here, follow the money. But who is it? Is health bureaucrats just a nub or a core of people that are kind of driving this? Or is it more distributed than that, do you think?
It's kind of interesting because we don't have a whole lot of data, but it appears to be the very small minority of gender of GPs who are really behind the prescribing here. A couple of years ago, we knew that there were only 10 in Christchurch, for example, where there would be hundreds of GPs. There are about 6,000 in the country altogether. But I think one of the things that is happening is that we've got a very tight restraint on talking about this. So we've got two things. One of the things is that Stuff Media will write an article about anyone who goes against the false consent on this. And the other thing is that the gender industry activists will mount a vexatious complaint against anyone who puts their head above the parapet. So my obvious solution to this would be that the Ministry of Health makes a statement to the effect that to speak with good conscience on issues of gender medicine is not a matter which should bring any clinician or anyone in the health sector into conflict with their professional associations. That would simply make an even playing field to be able to talk about this without restraint and in an open and a professional way.
Because follow the science doesn't seem to matter.
No.
And it matters in every other medical treatment except this one.
It's quite astonishing, and the only explanation is that idea that we're really talking about something which is social justice for adult trans people. And if you accept that there has to be social justice for adult transgender people, then there has to be social justice for children who have gender confusion. And that justice, so-called justice for children with gender confusion, really relates to your ability to provide them with life-changing medicine. It's horrible.
Without any factual basis.
Without any good evidence.
The do no harm, all the principles are thrown, seem to be, this is what blows my mind, thrown out the window.
Yes, yes. I mean, one of the other ways of looking at it is a kind of rights-based issue, like, you know, a human rights-based issue. And there's all sorts of international conventions that were signed up to protect children, you know, the Children's Convention on the Rights of the Child, conventions on disability, conventions on social and political rights. And all of them point, in my view, to the fact that we would look after children. We wouldn't subject them to the idea, for example, in the Convention on Women's Rights, to the idea that the way to be a woman is somehow stereotyped femininity. And yet gender medicine encodes that very idea. And so if you're looking at the way that you would care for children well in a society, you'd offer them the opportunity for an open future, for a life that's not constrained by the way that the decision that they might make in the face of inaccurate information as a 5, 7, 12-year-old, 13-year-old. You'd actually allow them and protect them to live into their adulthood. And that's not happening in New Zealand at the moment.
Regarding recent consultation on puberty blockers here, I believe that the Genspect had an in-person session with the Ministry of Health. What
We
happened there?
did. It was we took I went along. We took two clinicians, both from the Wellington region. We thought it was an in-person meeting, but it took place on Zoom.
Oh, okay.
It went very well. We were listened to, I think, very intently. As you suggest, I suspect this is going to be a political decision rather than a decision on the evidence. We asked about the creation of of medical guidelines, because one of our real concerns is that PATHA has at the moment got the pen on the medical guideline using the WPATH standards of care as guidance, which, as have now been shown in the States to have been abandoned. And they're also using a framework which is based on, as far as we know, this is the latest information that we got from Official Information Act queries, based on an adaptation of Professor Mason Dury's Te Whare Tapa Whā, which is a great tool, but it's been adapted by Elizabeth Kerikeri to be called Te Whare Takatāpui. And so it's not a clinical guideline creation tool at all. It's a transgender perspective of the world. It's a picture of the world as seen through the eyes of the transgender community. And I would argue that that's not a way to develop a clinical guideline. So the news that we got from the Ministry of Health, and they said this is a this they kind of laughed and said, well, the responsibility doesn't sit with us. It sits with Te Whatu Ora, with the Department of Health, and we've given them clear guidance about how they need to present a guideline which accords with the ministry's new guidance about being more cautious. But the nub of the issue really is that there is a conflict between affirmative care, which basically means believe the 5-year-old, believe the 7-year-old, the 12-year-old, put them into opposite sex clothes, give them
Can I just
puberty.
say, when would you ever believe
Yes.
kids?
When would you
I mean,
believe a
I've had three
5-year-old?
kids. They live in a fantasy world half the time. Just
I
and they
know.
need to because that's the way they grow their cognitive abilities, the play abilities
Yes.
to grow up. We all know that. So to believe them at that level, where you then follow on with these treatments and possibly surgeries.
It's insane. Yes, so there's the Ministry of Health are trying to implement holistic assessment, but you can't have holistic assessment within the umbrella of affirmative care. So one of the points that we made in person and in our submission was that if you give holistic assessment to people who are dedicated to gender medicine, they will magically discover that every child is transgender. That's the nature of it. It's like if you follow the lead of a child who says that they're the opposite sex and you provide them with affirmative care, then they are the opposite sex. And so you need people other than the gender medicine doctors and psychotherapists to be carrying out that holistic assessment. And we're somewhat constrained in New Zealand because a lot of the clinical areas of our medicine have decided to regard holistic assessment as akin to a conversion practice. So that's a really serious issue. I actually think that we need to change the conversion practices law, or the Ministry of Health needs to make a very clear statement that a holistic assessment, i.e., looking at the reasons why a child thinks it's the other sex and working out whether there are other factors, needs to be made explicitly part of any guidance that is put in place. And
There could be
that mustn't be carried out by people with a predisposition to assess a belief as a reality.
What about clinicians who would like to blow the whistle but feel they can't? Was there any discussion in your meeting here of whether, you know, that there could be protection, or that there could be some kind of confidence that people could do that at an official level?
I did raise the idea with the ministry that they make a clear statement that to speak responsibly about these issues in line with the emerging evidence overseas would be protected by the ministry, and they weren't prepared to make that commitment. They didn't, you know, I don't quite know why, and I didn't follow it up, but I had expected that that might lend itself to a positive comment from them about what they might do in that space, but it didn't.
To sum up, okay, we know what's happened in the US. Queensland have hit the pause, but that may be a permanent pause. It probably will turn out to be if it's a political issue in the end. And you cited that for here, that you think it's ultimately a political decision. I think you're probably right. Have you got any feeling for if the dominoes are falling, when our one might fall?
I really don't know. I hope
I know.
For
yeah.
better. But across Europe, in Italy, in France, in Germany, in Denmark, in Holland itself, where this kind of medical regime originated, in every one of those countries, there's currently a review going on. There'll be a change of government in Canada soon, and even already Alberta has legislated at a statewide to rein in the medicine. So the change seems inevitable, and it will be a terrible stain on this government that they have allowed more children than was strictly necessary down this road.
I guess we could talk about who faces responsibility for this mess later on. That's another issue, but that will come, won't it?
It will come. I'll tell you what's interesting about both the Queensland change and the US change is that it's not just about puberty blockers. It's actually about cross-sex hormones for children.
Right.
In the States, under 19, and I think in Australia, under 18. So what's very heartening in both those situations is that gender medicine is being seen as harmful for children and for young people.
Mm. And 18 is the line of the sand, obviously, where you're considered that you have enough faculty to make adult or approaching adult decisions. I want to get your comment on Matt Ducey, Minister for Mental Health, Associate Minister of Health. He used to work at the Tavistock Clinic in London. I think he studied his psychology at the Wellington Polytechnic, if the details I've seen are right. Is he appropriate for those roles, do you think?
Well, given that he has been unable to do anything stronger than a very mild restraint on puberty blockers, one has to wonder. Now, I've heard rumours from both I've heard rumours from both sides about him. For one, that he is vehemently anti taking any action in this space, and one that he doesn't really approve of puberty blockers. So it's not. I mean, if the man won't speak,
why doesn't he come out and say it?
Then yes, I mean, it's astounding to me that the politicians feel that this issue is so toxic that they are completely unwilling to place their thoughts on record. And that, I mean, there is a certain amount of courage that's needed in New Zealand because of the strapping effect of our mostly unsympathetic media.
Yeah, but Jan, trust in the media is below the basement. No one cares anymore for what the mainstream media might say. So
yes.
I wonder if this is an artifact of how things used to be done and politicians haven't caught up with that fact. I mean, one podcast on X will dwarf the entire media landscape in New Zealand. I'm talking a podcast out of here. So they really don't have the power on the numbers now to justify being so timid.
Thank you. Now, that's an interesting point. It's to me, it's becoming increasingly untenable, increasingly irresponsible. And as countries like the States are changing, increasingly lacking in courage not to act. So it would be wonderful to think that we might hear something definitive in the next weeks, but I suspect they will let the Ministry of Health's process around this grind on, and then make a political decision in the light of that review.
Which is a kind of cynical approach, isn't it, in the end? Because you're talking about young people's damn lives.
Yes, it is. It's very sad. And but that's where we are, where we are.
Yep. The cards that we're dealt. All right. Jan Rivers, Genspect NZ, spokeswoman for public good. Thanks for coming back on. Jan, won't be the last time we chat. I know that. And let's see what happens now.
Yeah, thank you very much. And all the best.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.